Today we're reviewing the fourth episode of The Book of Boba Fett, The Gathering Storm. Bo-Katan is rumored to get her own spinoff series, and J.J. Abrams wants to kill Coruscant until Lucasfilm said no. All that and more here on Chatooine. So I'll go ahead and just spill the beans. I literally launched this, or not even launched it. I did all of that while we were off the air. Like I ran through the usual show intro while off the air. Thank God Goldman noticed, or we would have been here for an hour. And everybody would have been like, "What the fuck's happening with the show?"
I was refreshing the stream, and I was just like, "Are we live?" And then like I was waiting, and I was like, "Wait a minute."
I don't think there's been a Chatooine show yet we haven't had some sort of either technical difficulties or just stupidity on my end. But if you are new here, welcome to Chatooine. If you guys are watching, please watch on the official Chatooine YouTube channel. If you guys are watching on my channel, Star Wars Only, we won't be going live on that channel anymore after the ending of Book of Boba Fett. So you got a month, okay. All right? You got a month to make that transition between Star Wars Only to Chatooine support. The Chatooine channel on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. All the links are in the description below. But welcome back. I'm joined with Papamemes, the Goldman. Lunga is sleeping at the moment. and this comment is absolutely accurate. I need to quit smoking before the podcast. I'm actually 110% sober right now. So it's just stupidity at this point. Maybe the smoking has affected my brain.
It was like 2 weeks ago where I'm sitting there with the Twitter chat open. I'm waiting for the link. And I'm like, where is it? And you're like,
we've been waiting for Goldman.
And it's here. I'm like, oh, I just had to scroll.
Where is he?
That was pretty embarrassing.
Man. Yeah, we make fools of ourselves here, but you guys don't have to be fools in the comment section. Hope everything is going good for everybody. Things are going pretty well over here for most of us. Poor Palpmemes is recovering from. I was trying to think of a Star Wars illness, but I can't think of one other than what's happening to the Jedi and the High Republic. I just finished the recent book. Was it The Rising? It's not The Rising Storm.
The Gathering Storm?
That's the book of Something Storm. It's the most recent High Republic book. We need to have a book club.
The Rising Storm.
There's a new one that just came out. You're going to make me Google this now.
I don't know. I don't have it. I should get it, though.
Yeah, Claudia Gray didn't. Fallen she didn't. Star. The Fallen Star. Thank you. Yeah. Jeez. Fallen Star. Okay, I just finished that literally an hour ago. Don't really recommend it. But anyways, casually don't recommend it. I'll make a review on it this week. But do you guys want to start off with anything specific? Do you guys want to go Book of Boba first, the rumor stuff first, or the drama first?
I feel like Book of Boba should go. I was going to say it should probably go last since it's the major topic, but
I don't know. I feel like people are here for Boba Fett. Why make them wait?
That's a good point. Okay. Yeah. I agree. Boba Fett
if the chat says Boba, it might be Boba, and it's probably going to be Boba.
Fair enough.
Let's start. Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 4, The Gathering Storm. And I'll have to say, I know we've all kind of kept our opinions hidden from each other up until this point in terms of having a good dialogue about this. I really enjoyed this episode, and it was kind of a different enjoyment. Like when I was watching it, I didn't feel like there was a lot of action from it, and that's completely fine. But throughout most of the episode, I was just kind of laying back, watching for something to happen and just watching the story. And I really felt engaged with the characters. And of course, that being Boba Fett and Fennec Shand. But this episode for me is kind of what I've wanted this entire series to be about so far, of like really understanding the motivation behind Boba and his reasoning, what he's going to do going forward. And it's the ending of the flashbacks. And the flashbacks were unique to me because there were flashbacks during Mandalorian season 1 and 2. And so I liked seeing that. And it felt very recent. It felt like almost unpredictable in a sense. Like I didn't expect him to bring Fennec to those weird modifier people. And I really didn't expect him to go back to the Sarlacc pit to look for more of his armor. And so there's a lot of moments in this episode that I thought narratively were really good and that really shine some light on Boba Fett as a character. And I love the relationship between him and Fennec Shand. I said in my review today that they have a lot of respect for each other that I really liked seeing. And I don't feel like you have that in a lot of other Star Wars relationships. And so I'm really liking what they're doing with her character. I feel like there should be a little bit more with her. And I feel like Boba got a lot of light in this sense of we know what he's doing now. Our complaints of not really knowing his motivation for the past three episodes, that doesn't seem relevant anymore. And also the direction of this episode, the guy who directed it, I can't say his last name, but his first name's Kevin. He did a great job. It's kind of sad that like every episode of this series so far that Robert Rodriguez hasn't directed, I have enjoyed. And I don't know what that's about, but this episode I enjoyed. Rating wise, I gave it an 8 out of 10. I would rewatch it pretty much in a heartbeat. I love the crime family stuff. I love the building up of the war. I love the fact that he brought in Black Chrysanthemum, and they gave him a little bit of a backstory too, in a scene that had a lot of tension in it. All that worked really well for me. And plus the ending, the tease that Din Djarin will be in the next episode, very fitting. I'm excited for the next week's episode. I'm excited more than I have been this entire series. So I like that it's building up, and I think personally this episode redeemed any faults that the series has had. And I know that may be kind of a reach, but in terms of I guess how I feel now and how I'll feel in hindsight looking back on the show a year from now, this is the episode I'll look at it where I'll be like, okay, things really got started, and it kind of elevated. You know, when we see the Bad Batch series, episode one and I think the second to last episode, and even like the Cad Bane episode, those kind of elevated Bad Batch to like another level of quality. Even if you don't like all the other episodes, those episodes stand above the rest, and so they bring it up just a little bit. That's how I feel about this episode, chapter four of The Book of Boba Fett, The Gathering Storm. I really felt like it elevated this series to kind of a different stratosphere of quality in Star Wars. But that's my take. You guys know how we do it. We do it clockwise. Palpanemes, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. I honestly, like, when I first watched it, I was like, this is my second favorite episode. But as I think about it, overall, I might like this episode more than episode two, specifically for that point that this is the official turning point of the series. I know we only have three episodes left after this, but still, what's left to come is pretty major, and they set up a very, very great ending for this show. When you say that, it kind of redeems the faults that the other episodes had. I think the reason is because it's the turning point, right? We're getting over that stepping stone. We're on to a new phase. The flashbacks are done. He's healed, as the little droid said. I love the part where he's fighting that droid in the palace. and he tells him, "I am Boba Fett," or "Do you know who I am?" or something like that. It was just funny. I love the way Boba's written in this show. I saw an article by The Guardian that said that this show has killed the character of Boba Fett. And I'm like, well, who was Boba Fett before this? Because Boba Fett before this was dead. So how's this working? I love Boba Fett. They're giving him a lot of depth, and the Din Djarin thing, that was a great tease. And I don't know, do you guys think Din Djarin's going to show up next episode? Because we also have some rumors about that, about what he could potentially be flying in. I don't know if you guys have seen. I 100%
think he'll be in that. I have no clue what you're talking about.
Really?
Bespin Bulletin said that he will be showing up with the Naboo Starfighter, and this is corroborated by Jason Ward from Making Star Wars. He said this last year, I think, that there would be a Naboo Starfighter in, did he say Book of Boba Fett? I thought he said it was Mandalorian season 3.
It was, you would see a Naboo in the Mandalorian thing.
Okay. Now, is it going to be the, like the yellow ship, like the N1 Starfighter, or like Padme's ship?
Yeah, the N1.
Mirror. Okay.
Well, that's the thing, is people are speculating that it's going to be like a rusty, it's not going to be pure yellow, because that the contrast would look bad, like Mandalorian said, anything that just looked bad. I think the Naboo Starfighter is going to be just this beat up, rusted, a dark metallic. But I give this episode a 7.8 out of 10. I love the thing with Black Chrysanthemum, even though it was kind of random, but it served its purpose for giving him some backstory and then giving Boa a reason to be like, hey, you can join my team. They're gathering all the people up. I think Din's going to show up next episode. I'm trying to think. It's about all my thoughts, really. I really liked it. And I don't know, it might be my favorite episode just because it is that point. We're getting on to the next phase. I am glad the flashbacks are done. They were good while they lasted, but I think there was a little too much of them. And we didn't have any of the Vespa stuff in here. It's like there's a new, we're turning a new page. And I can't wait to see.
Yeah, the flashbacks got old really fast.
I still think the first episode or two should have been just flashbacks, that whole storyline, and then you should have gone on. I'm still sticking with that. even these episodes the way through, I still think it should have been flashbacks first, then current story. However, I will say it is creative to whenever he goes in the back to tank, then you have flashbacks because he needs to heal. It's creative. I'll give him props and credit for that. But yeah, 7.8 out of 10.
I thought the episode was fine. It gave me some of the answers I wanted. You know, I was complaining about Boba Fett's motivations, and we kind of put the pieces together in the previous few episodes, but here he kind of just says it to Fennec Shand. And I don't know. I don't particularly like the way he just says it. He's like, oh, I want to build a family. I don't know, because I never... This is what a lot of people love about the second episode, and maybe this is just the way I felt. I just didn't get that vibe from it, and I didn't get sold on why Fennec Shand would want to help out Boba Fett. I guess she wants that loyalty to that Boba Fett preached. I don't know. Maybe it was the acting, but the acting's good. It's really hard for me to put into words, but I did like how they somewhat addressed Fennec Shand's relationship with Boba Fett. I just don't like how, maybe that's my biggest problem. I don't like how we got all these answers in the middle point of the series. As Palpameme said, I think we should have just taken all the flashbacks and made them the first few episodes so the story builds momentum. I just don't think the story beats in a flashback work as well. And I don't know, maybe it's just my mentality that I'm just uninterested in the time period between Boba Fett crawling out of the Sarlacc pit to where we were in The Mandalorian. Like, I wasn't particularly interested in seeing how he got Slave One. I do understand that whole fight scene was because he needed to convince Fennec Shand in a way that she should join him. She's not just going to say, oh, I'll join you, whatever. I did like the... it had the same vibe as the biker kids from the third episode, like the cyberpunk medical bay. They had, like, these weird eyes, mm-hmm. like the shiny mm-hmm. colors. It's weird. Like, it feels out of place for Star Wars, but at the same time, when you think about it, it makes sense. Like, if you wanted to be edgy in Star Wars, you'd probably look like that. So I'll give it a little bit of some slack. I thought when they went to the Sarlacc pit, that was completely stupid. I don't understand why that scene was in the show. I guess because it's implied now the flashback's over, so we're not even going to see Boba Fett, like, see Cobb Vanth to get his armor back. So they go to the Sarlacc pit. He's like, oh, let me check if my armor's in there. I mean, what did he think was going to happen? Did he think he was going to crawl in there and find it at first? And he didn't even... Why didn't he just kill the Sarlacc pit right away and then crawl in there? Did he expect to find it while he was alive? I do understand why he would think the armor's still in there. Because, you know, crawling out, you lose all your memory. Dehydration, that's fine. I just thought that was a completely wasted scene. It didn't work for me. But again... This has been the theme of the series for me. This is probably why I like the third one the best, even though it's the one that everyone hates the most. Because I'm just so interested in the stuff in the present, because that's where all the momentum is for me. So that when they spend time in the past, even if it is fleshing out the character a little bit more, it just doesn't work as well for me. I don't like the way it doesn't build momentum. It's like, oh, the story's on pause, and I hate that. I think it's like a big reason why like Canto Bight didn't work for a lot of people, because the most interesting aspect of that movie is the stuff that's going on with Rey and Luke. And so when we're watching Canto Bight, we're like, oh, let's just get to the interesting stuff. I feel like the good stuff's on pause. So that's how I felt watching these Boba Fett episodes. I want to see the stuff, the main stuff. I want to see the story progress. But once we got into the present, I was a fan. I liked the dinner scene. It shows Boba Fett's a strategist. He's not just an idiot. He knows that, hey, these people aren't going to just work for me if I'm nice. They have to do what's in their best interest, and they know that the Pikes aren't going to... He knows that if the Pikes rule Tatooine, they're going to knock them out too. So I like how Boba Fett's playing politics, because that's the politics I like, and that's what Game of Thrones did really well. It's like the interplay of like rivalries within the houses. Not so much the politics in the prequels with taxes and all that, just like the politics of people like trying to best each other, not physically. So I loved that. I'm curious to see where the episode's going to go. I like how someone said, this guy just said episode 3 was the best. It's the one I enjoyed the most because it pushed the story forward the most. And I like how in this, I'm excited to see where the story is going to go, because he's now going to go on a recruitment tour. We assume he's going to go to Din Djarin, ask for help. Awesome. I like Din Djarin. and he has to get other people. I mean, Mando was a good fighter, but he's not enough to fight the Pike Syndicate. So maybe well, if you
bring
he'll
one
go.
Mandalorian, you're going to bring them all.
Yeah, but that's a question I had. Like, isn't Mando preoccupied right now? He has to be doing something with Bo-Katan.
Well, that's what's interesting is that, like, we don't really, like, last time we saw him, of course, was on the bridge of that Imperial ship right. with Moff Gideon yeah. and everything. So I would say, like, hypothetically, just logically speaking, kind of like how we were like, well, what happened mm-hmm. to Boba Fett, like, after the Sarlacc pit? Well, he crawled out. Like, that's the easiest thing to just go with. I feel like the easiest thing for us to assume Din Djarin is at this moment is that he took Moff Gideon with Marshal formerly known as Cara Dune, and took Moff Gideon into like prison or something like that, left, mm-hmm. and then let's just say immediately or whenever he was getting a new ship, and that's kind of what he's been spending his time doing. And so when he gets the call from Boba Fett, he's like, okay, I could probably use this to get some money, get a new ship, better ship than mm-hmm. the N1, you know, starfighter thing. So that could be where he's at. I don't know. I don't think he's I don't think he's busy with the Mandalore thing. I feel like if anything, him coming in will probably build up to that a little bit. Like he could say, okay, I'll help you with this, but you got to help me reclaim Mandalore. I feel like that would be the route to go because they definitely would need each other. Like if Boba needs Din to help take over Tatooine, I think Din would definitely benefit from Boba Fett in order to take over Mandalore. And plus they could hypothetically say like Boba Fett's training is different from typical Mandalorian training. So he could even be like a unique view on how to take back Mandalore. I don't know. I think that's going to be the easy part for the story is to figure out what Din has been doing since Mandalorian season two.
I disagree. Cause Bo-Katan, if what happened in the Mandalorian season two finale stands and Bo-Katan's like, oh, I need to fight him to get the Darksaber. I feel like she wouldn't just let him wander off. Maybe they resolved it. Maybe they didn't. There's no way they're going to resolve that off screen. So it's curious. And then as much as we love Mando, Din Djarin, he alone isn't going to be enough to take back Tatooine. Are other Mandalorians going to show up? Maybe some of Bo-Katan's crew, maybe. Or maybe he'll go to some other places and try and recruit some other people based off of rumors that we have heard.
Well, the funny thing you mentioned other places, Tamir Morrison in like today's YouTube video that he did on interview on, he mm-hmm. specifically said like he mentioned Ewoks and said that he loved working with them. And I don't like Ewoks. The quote right here is, yeah, he literally says, I like those Ewoks. They were great to work with.
Ewoks.
Ewoks, and this
I'm,
is from
I'm,
BuzzFeed.
I'm backtracking. Did he ever work with Ewoks?
No,
he did not. Yeah, no, he did not.
There's no Ewoks in the prequels. No teddy bears.
So we could be going to the forest moon of Endor for reasons I do not know.
Boy. I have a hypothesis. What if we heard the rumors before the series that there was going to be fan service everywhere? This series was going to be all killer, no filler. That fans were going to go insane. Four episodes in, that's not really the case. We haven't gotten any cameos, and I like that. Now, I don't particularly like the way they approached it, but I like how they've kept the story contained so far. Is that going to start now? The three episodes left? Is he gonna go on his, going to go on his recruitment tour? Oh, let's go to Mandalore. Let's go to Endor. Why would he go to Endor, though? Does Boba Fett even know about Endor? He died before he found out anything about the Empire being on Endor, or maybe he did know. I think he's going to
work closely with Vader. I think he's going to recruit all the bounty hunters as well. I mean, it's pretty curious with that, or not curious, self-evident with that, with Black Rosantin joining him. Then you have, I like him bringing in Black Rosantin. That was kind of obvious that he was going to do it, but him doing that adds some muscle. Him having Fennec Shand is a big boost, and then bringing in Din Djarin, the four of them alone. I'm like, you guys could do a lot of damage, and that's a really big crew to take on stuff with. They just need more. That's all I ever think about with Boba, is that he just needs mm-hmm. more. And this is a good point too. Like Bo-Katan, if she needs help taking Mandalore, there could be kind of like a mutual benefit to this of like, imagine Din Djarin and his friends or his allies not only taking over Tatooine and having Boba Fett run that, but then they take over Mandalore. So you have mm-hmm. these two planets with who control a lot of the crime, but also arguably one of the best fighting forces in Star Wars, the Mandalorians. That's a powerful alliance to have. Of course, none of that fucking matters because of the sequels and, you know, the First Order rises to power and everything goes to shit. But it's cool to think of right now, isn't it?
Well, this the First Order rising doesn't really change much about what about the story. I mean, if they take the Empire from Mandalore, the Empire at this point is basically the First Order. They're just not the First Order yet. Like, they don't have that name. So the Empire, it's also weird. I still find it very hard to believe that the New Republic would just allow the Empire to keep Mandalore. Maybe, I know Mandalore was independent, but that was the whole thing, especially in the lore about the I can't even say the word, disarmament program or peace thing they signed where they would disarm the Empire completely. So that would be a little weird if the Empire was like completely in control of Mandalore. Also, we don't know how Thrawn plays into all this. Maybe Thrawn's in charge of Mandalore. Did he ever show interest in Mandalore from Rebels?
I don't think so. It's funny that you bring him up because this being season 2.5 of The Mandalorian, like, it definitely feels really separate from it up until this episode, this recent episode. And I agree, it should, but it's this is like a very unique corner of the galaxy. And like I said in the last episode that we did for Tatooine, is that this is all on Tatooine. We haven't left Tatooine yet. We haven't even gone to space. Like, you guys realize that we haven't seen space in this episode.
First time we saw a ship.
Yeah, first time we've seen a ship, him fly it, him kind of use a ship in any capacity like that. So this series is a very unique take on Star Wars, and I don't dislike it. I am not a huge fan of it yet, but it is growing on me, and I do hope that it gets better. But like you were saying, Goldman, is that there's been so many rumors about all these like cameos. We said that, you know, it's going to be Luke and Han, according to some sources, and even some rumors, and like I said, rumors that Ben Solo will appear in the last episode when Han shows up, and then you have Cad Bane, Bossk. I mean, all these characters that are supposed to happen, and now it's like you have four episodes to do it. The pacing of the show doesn't really give me confidence that that's going to happen. You know, the pacing of the show has been very, very, very slow, and it wasn't until this last episode that we watched today that I was like, okay, like, we're finally getting somewhere, and we're finally getting into the story that is actually captivating someone like me. So I don't know how they're going to go forward with this. I don't know if they're going to ramp it up to 10, because it felt like with The Mandalorian, every episode of season 2 just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. This series,
if you look at season 1 of The Mandalorian, it didn't really take off with the main storyline, which is when Moff Gideon comes in, until I think episode
7.
6 or 7.
7.
And then, like, from there on out, it was nonstop action. So I think episode 5, which is next week's, is going to be the recruitment episode. We're going to see these people come in. There's going to be some hidden ones that they're not going to show. And then 6 and 7 is going to be nonstop.
Number 6 is written by Dave Filoni. So that one I'm expecting to be either a bunch of member berries, a disappointment, or the best thing yet. Nothing between.
Based
all
on
three
his
of
track
those.
Record, it's going to
yeah.
be
one of the three. The Mandalorian season 1 was interesting because the first 3 episodes progressed the story. The second 3 were each kind of their own episodes, like, oh, Mando's meeting this person, Mando's meeting this person, Mando's meeting this person. And the last 2 concluded the story. And then season 2 was pretty much all progressing the plot, except for maybe the second one. And Boba Fett's kind of like that, except half the time it's flashbacks, so it's not really. It's like, over here, we need to fill out what's here, over here. So do you think, I didn't know that though. If Dave Filoni is directing episode 6, and Boba Fett is going to get Mando, or going to go find Mando, and potentially recruit him and the Mandalorians and make a deal, do you think we'll get a Sabine appearance? Especially with the recent casting of Sabine. They did that with Ahsoka.
I don't think we're getting Sabine. I think it's too early, and I think it's too distant from what we know. Because if you bring Sabine in, then it gets confusing with like Bo-Katan and Din Djarin. Because if I was Din Djarin, or even Boba, and I saw Sabine, and I saw how pissed she was about, you know, Din having the fucking Darksaber, I'd be like, wait a minute, bitch, you just gave this little chick the Darksaber, but now you're mad at Din Djarin for having it. Like, make your mind, all right? Like, Bo-Katan has a weird history, but just in general, I think Sabine being brought in, at least in this series, I don't think it'll do her justice. I think you want... What was big about Ahsoka showing up in The Mandalorian is that it was kind of what they call backdoor pilot, of here's Ahsoka, and also she's getting her own series. I don't think Sabine is a character of that magnitude where it can also be part of that backdoor pilot where it's like, here's Sabine and she's going to be a co-star of the Ahsoka Tano series. I think Boba Fett itself as a series, while probably is doing really good in ratings compared to the other Mandalorian seasons, just because of the popularity of Disney Plus and Star Wars, I don't think it still is going to serve Sabine's character in order to launch her into her series with Ahsoka. I think it's...
That's a good point.
I just think it's too soon.
I've got a question. Do you guys think with when Din Djarin inevitably shows up, I think we can all expect him to show up. Like, there's no reason 100%. They would tease that.
He has to know.
Do you guys think he's going to show up with the Darksaber? Because as a simp for that thing, I really want to see him fight with that again. Do you guys think he's going to be trained in that? Like,
see, that it's a weird question because... but if he has it, then it brings up the whole Bo-Katan situation. In my mind, right after the Mandalorian season 2 ends, they have to resolve that. I don't think Bo-Katan's just going to let Mando wander off, even though Mando just wants to hand her the Darksaber. I don't think he'll have the Darksaber. It just doesn't seem like Mando to him.
Be so cool, though.
It would be cool.
Yeah.
I think we'll get that eventually. I don't think in this show, though.
Maybe not.
A question I do pose, in the fourth episode of Mandalorian Season 1, the lady, I don't know what her name was, the widow? Was that her name? Something. She asked Mando, what happens if he takes off his mask? And he's like, if someone sees, then I can never put it on again. At the end of Mandalorian Season 2, he took off his mask in front of everyone. Do you think he'll be masked the whole time?
But his logic changed because he actually met other Mandalorians, so he realized it was a cult, basically. And
he realized it wasn't the way.
Yeah.
So is he gonna have his arc? So he's not gonna have his helmet on the whole time. I don't think so.
Probably not the whole time. He's probably more open to taking it off.
I think he'll have it on. I think he'll have it on the whole time. Honestly, I think with the limited amount of acting Pedro Pascal probably did for like Book of Boba Fett. And I mean, I know he was on set. I mean, he put up that picture, and I'm pretty sure part of that was for season 3, but a lot of it might have been for the Book of Boba Fett. I'm pretty confident he'll have on his helmet most of the time, just because that's how we know him. The Pedro Pascal face aspect of it is supposed to be like a big and grand deal. And despite what what's her name, Grace Randolph says, I'm pretty sure Pedro's fine just having the helmet on most of the time. But I do agree with our boy. Okiro or Kiro, episode 4 to me is the real pilot. Like, that's kind of how I felt after, I think 2 or 3, that was really the launch of it. But when you look back at like those past 3 episodes and you look at this one really felt like it was launching the story. And someone else made a good comment earlier that it really felt like truly season 2.5 of The Mandalorian. And that's how I feel so far, is that now we're getting into the grander scale of what Star Wars is and not just always about, just Boba. And yeah, shout out to Lunga. We called it. He overslept. It's all right, Lunga. It's all right. We know as
he's an old man. Older, let him rest.
Needs more time to sleep, poor guy. He said he slept, he didn't go to bed until like noon, which is funny because I didn't wake up until like 1 p.m. today, which sucks. He gave this episode a 2.
Good lord.
Wow. Man, it's so weird how like everything has kind of changed in like our opinions on things, but like Goldman is liking things or disliking things that I thought he would like, and I'm liking things I thought I would dislike. And then definitely for Lunga, I thought he would like this episode a lot. I love the mafia and mob style of this episode, of him sitting down with the families and, you know, becoming the head of a house. Like, I hope it keeps going down that path, but we don't know. We'll see what happens on the next
House
one.
Fett. Sounds weird.
House Fett. It is, and it sounds weird that they're calling it a house and everything, because it's, you know, mafia and mob stuff is about families, and it's actually supposed to be like blood related. You're supposed to be Sicilian. If you're going to become a made man, like, you have to be 110% Italian. And in this series, it's like, I have a house, even though I was owned by a slug before me, or a Bid Fortuna after that. Like, you're just taking over things. So I don't know how it's a house or a family related, but it's Star Wars. I'm not supposed to question it. Book of Mid, Jesus.
Book of Mid,
yeah. I can agree to that.
I don't think he's even seen the show. He just comes to troll.
Lunga says, "How the hell did he forget getting cold cocked by Jawas? He was probably fucked up. I mean, he had all the acid on him. He was out of it."
Yeah. My brother asked me the same thing about that. Like, after he goes, "Wait," I said, "Do you know what he's been through in that Sarlacc pit?"
Poor takes from Lunga.
Poor takes from Lunga. And yes, we can have him on. Bring him on anytime. More guests the merrier. We still haven't had a real guest. Yeah.
Okay. Like, we never had a guest. Palpamuse was the first guest.
Technically, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, No, we were missing somebody that day, and we were like, Valve Memes, yeah. You want to come? Yeah. You want to come be like our substitute?
Well, he was technically a guest. He was a part timer back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then taking off his helmet is hard, given Pedro is busy filming other things. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That's a good point.
We need Lunga's disgruntled perspective. Yeah, it's funny that he doesn't like it. And I see what Lunga's saying though, that like Boba still has to prove kind of the same thing he's proved over the past four episodes. Nobody respects him. And it is funny because he'll make like decisions that I do kind of question, where they're like, all right, we got to go, you know, walk the streets. And it's like, well, why does Boba have to do it? Like he wants everything to be safe, which is completely fine. But like, I need him to do like a power move. Like I need him to do something. And this episode was just him negotiating, being a little bit political, being a leader and recruiting because he got Black Rosantin on his side. So I want to see him do more of that in these next four episodes. Like that's what's weird is that this entire series was based on the premise that him taking over Jabba, he is going to be the crime lord. I have not really seen him be a crime lord yet. He just started in this episode. I want them to continue that trajectory. But with them saying that there's going to be all these big reveals and stuff going forward, I guess I don't really know how they're going to pull all of this off. Like in my mind, here's how I see the rest of the series going, even though it makes no sense at all. He's going to defeat the Pikes. He's going to run into Luke Skywalker. He's going to run into Han Solo and Ben Solo. He's going to fight Cad Bane again. Like, yeah, all this stuff like is in my mind that it's going to happen. And yet I have no idea how the fuck they're even going to work that out.
Hear me
out. I will hear you out.
Look, and I'm going to say this as I go. I don't have this fully thought out yet, so I might screw this up horribly. He's going to go find Din Djarin. Din Djarin's like, well, I've got people we can recruit. So him and Din Djarin go to find Luke Skywalker, who naturally is with Ben Solo,
but he doesn't even know.
They're gonna go
Luke's
bring
name.
Him back to. That's true, but yeah. I told you I didn't think this through. Maybe he knows now. Maybe Luke reached out to him.
But what's really interesting to me is, in these types of shows, there needs to be that central antagonist, especially in a crime boss, because I feel like the climactic moment has to be. I should say has to be, but usually is. Boba Fett is going to defeat the head of the opposing crime, and then he will gain all the power. Is it who? We don't know who the head of the Pikes is. We know the mayor is working with the Pikes. The mayor—that's not a physical threat. He can't even speak English. He speaks out of two mouths from the sides and needs an adapter. That just doesn't seem like a climactic final battle. Maybe it's Kira. Maybe it's someone we don't know.
Yeah, maybe
it's
Bane. A big reveal. I mean,
maybe.
Oh God,
they haven't been teasing that.
Kira doesn't seem so far off to me. Like Kira, like. Truth be told, the way this show has gone so far, I really do expect a second season. Because I feel like the whole crime lord stuff has just kind of been put to the wayside to really focus on Boba Fett's history.
Yeah.
And like after this episode, it makes me kind of regret the Tusken Raider arc. I mean, that was cool and all, but it could have been done in one episode. And not only that, it's like he could have, like, let's say you've never seen any of the episodes before this. Let's say this is the very first episode of Book of Boba Fett that you have watched. I don't really think you're missing anything at all, because him simply saying, like, you know, the Tusken Raiders took me in, you know, they treated me as one of their own, without you seeing the past three episodes to realize the flawed logic in that, because they fucking dragged him in the goddamn dirt, I think you would be like, oh, cool, like, this makes a lot of sense. And speaking of making a lot of sense, our boy Lunga is here to tell us why this episode sucked. So, Lunga, you hated Chapter 4, The Gathering Storm. Please tell us why.
And that's all I have to say.
The silence is deafening, as they say. God. Kyra says, what happens if Kira is the one in command of all the Pikes? She's kind of the crime boss in all the given comics.
I'd like that. That would be awfully.
Yeah, kind of.
You sound terrible.
Now you hear me? Okay. There we go. No, I'm on my phone. I'm on my phone, and I just woke up, and, you know, all that other shit of why I would sound terrible. What is the matter with y'all? Why are y'all being blinded by nonsense?
I said the episode was fine. I didn't particularly like it all that much.
I enjoyed
it. Let's break this down. It was one of the longer episodes, right? 40 minutes, just about, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We had 10 minutes of present day. We had 30 minutes of flashbacks again. Okay? And then let's also quantify this. Of those 30 minutes, it was about 10 to 12 minutes of him riding a Bantha.
Wasn't that long, you liar.
Yes, it was.
Okay,
go
about that.
Yeah, if you could, fine. You could say that about the campfire stuff. I could hear the argument that like they had two scenes of dialogue around the campfire that could have been redundant. But I liked both of those scenes. I like the slow pace of this one because it really did enhance, in my opinion, his character and his story.
No, it brought full circle again of what they wanted. Oh, look, we need to show that the Tuskens affected him. They changed him, and then he goes around and he blows up all the Nyctos and kills the last one with a missile, like. Punctuate it like, oh, here we go. Can we mention the whole beginning part when he gets Fennec Shan fixed was a Alita Battle Angel fever dream? Because Robert Rodriguez just has to inject his cyberpunk stuff into this.
He didn't direct.
Was that Robert? Yeah, he didn't direct this one. I mean, he could have been a story contributor, but he is one of the
executive producers. He is one of the executive producers. This was handed to him. He's one of the guys in charge. I'm telling you, people don't believe this. You can see his aesthetic everywhere. Doesn't matter it's not like Mandalorian where each director had their own thing and Favreau was controlling all that. No, this was a joint thing. This was Rodriguez working with Favreau to make this. And Favreau stupidly said, that sounds cool.
Well, I agree that Robert Rodriguez probably should not really do Star Wars after this. Someone made a good comment that he is the most like George Lucas in terms of a director than anyone else we've seen before. And he is in all the bad ways.
George's style is like, it's pretty flat, I'll be honest. Like, well, it reminds me of Rodriguez. It's very, he's like, there's so many scenes like, where it's literally just static camera. People walk or static camera. Yeah, it's the most...
One of my favorite shots from Revenge of the Sith is right when Anakin's walking into Palpatine. and like they have this intense music playing and the camera's just still and Anakin's like speed walking.
Yes, it's just like that funny.
It's very
he like jogs and then like George's like, all right, now slow it down.
That's a funny meme that like I saw someone say about the prequels is how like with John Williams there will be literally like nothing happening on screen, like characters will be walking and John Williams will just be orchestrating the most insane piece of music, and for some reason George is like, yeah, let's put that there.
I agree with this point that the episodes, like how long they have been in the first four episodes after this episode, I genuinely think, and the first thing I thought after seeing it is that some fan out there could probably edit all four episodes into one episode and make it not only like kind of a movie, but like the pilot episode of the series. That can be an issue, is that you could consider the first three semi-filler.
Me and Yellow talked about it this morning. If you put all the present day scenes together, it's one episode. We basically have three episodes of backstory filler and one episode of the present day underworld stuff, which is what I wanted to see. And the present day underworld stuff was 50-50 in quality. So that's why it's killing me. It's killing me that this is happening. Well, and it's killing me that people are making excuses. Oh, well, he got cold cocked, so he, maybe he just forgot. He had amnesia. He didn't remember that, even though we saw that in a memory. He forgot it, right? Okay, sure. Yeah. But what was it thematically? What was the reason?
I mean, I want to show the Sarlacc pit.
I want to show the Sarlacc pit.
I had to show the Sarlacc pit. Special editions, you know, like it was a callback to George. You know, his first step on fucking up Star Wars.
No, they could use that if they needed to do that scene. They could have had him figuring out how Cobb Vanth got his armor. They completely ignored that. Like that didn't happen.
You know what this is reminding me of?
I thought they were going to that, but they said, nope, we're ending the flashbacks.
I was like, oh, they're gonna, so now you can watch The Mandalorian and kind of connect it, but this is reminding me of Phantom Menace, you know, that whole thing where you can kind of not watch Phantom Menace and you'd be perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah, it literally has, like, no bearing on, like, pretty much the rest of the series. Like, midichlorians are almost dropped immediately after that.
They're not mentioned one other time in the
previous. Yeah, it's 10 years later.
Why are you mentioning you don't clean off acid with water? That just spreads it!
Bro, this is Star Wars. We can give a fuck about scientific
accuracy. That's what you can care about the show.
Can one of you guys answer me this? Now that the flashbacks are over, maybe they'll tie this in the future. What was the point of seeing all those flashbacks on Kamino?
To show his humanization. To show that all his life is never...
That he wanted to look at Rain.
This is his daddy!
No, it's to show that his dad's... What is that playing in the background?
he's in an elevator right now.
They turned on the TV.
Oh, it's to show that he's never had a true family his entire life, let alone.
Oh, poor baby. He was a fucking clone.
Yeah. So he's it's a show that the Tusken Raiders became that family.
That was a poorly way to do it then.
I don't know. I thought that was weird. I mean, nostalgia, you know.
The only good thing about this episode is they pretty much said we're going to be done with the flashbacks because he's done with the Vector Tank treatments.
It's kind of funny that, like, you know, when we came into the Book of Boba Fett, we were all like, well, Boba Fett's not really much of a character you can go for, right? Like, I remember Goldman being like, what's there to do with this character? And I myself acknowledge that this is just fan service. This is going to be a fan service kind of show, and good for the fans. We've been waiting on this for 40 years. Surprisingly, some of the least interesting aspects of the show were the characterization of Boba Fett up until this point, in my opinion. And we've just been kind of waiting for something to happen. And I feel like things are finally happening, but it may be, do you think it's too little too late? I mean, we're halfway through this series.
Yes,
now. Not at all. We have four more episodes to go.
No. Yes.
It's hard to keep an audience. I mean, marketing wise, you have to show somebody a product like 16 times before they're more than likely to buy it. Like that's how much you have to market something to somebody. With a show, though, I mean, in a series, in order to get someone into a narrative or into a story, I think after 4 hours of what we've already seen, you're going to be hard pressed to have a lot of casual audiences be invested in the show. But I'm not sure.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, but I don't think it's irredeemable, but that's just coming from someone who has thoroughly enjoyed the show, because I can see where it's going. Episode 3, I really didn't. That's definitely the lowest episode for me, but even then, I was like, it's not as bad as everyone's making it out to be. It's pretty bad, but it's not as bad. But then episodes 1, 2, and 4, I thought were pretty good, and they're setting up a lot of great stuff, especially this recent episode. So the next 3 episodes, they're going to be filled with a lot of stuff. I say that, and I really hope I'm not lying to myself, but they're going to be filled with some good stuff and get some good aspects.
They're setting up trash.
Can I pose a hot take? Am I the only one who's not too impressed with Temuera Morrison's acting?
Yep, neither am I.
He doesn't have a lot to work with. To be fair,
there's scenes in The Mandalorian where even with his helmet on, maybe it's just the direction, but I instantly know exactly what he's thinking when he's like looking at the ball, when he's doing certain things. I feel like Boba Fett, he had one good acting moment for me, and that's when the Tusken Raiders were being burned. He kind of just like looking at them. To me, that worked. And besides that, I feel like I still don't really know much about Boba Fett's personality. I mean, he's kind of funny. Like when he was doing the speeder bike thing, when he was like, Bantha. Ready like a Bantha. Like, that was funny. That's like the only time we've seen Boba Fett kind of be funny at all. Unless I'm missing.
Series was funny so far.
He has he's a soft spot, you know, for the Bantha, for the Rancor. So I guess I like that, but I think
his acting's fine, personally. I don't have a problem with it.
But I don't think it's like, did you? You didn't say it was bad, but you said it was just kind of lackluster. I can.
I won't say it's bad. I feel like, but again, certain scenes aren't being enhanced. Like when Boba Fett was talking about how the reason he wants loyalty is because he wants to have like a family again. To me, I feel like that could have been acted a little better. Maybe it's the direction. I feel like the acting didn't enhance the scene at all. Especially if he's talking about something really personal to him. He kind of just says, I want to build a family. I can offer you loyalty. I don't know. It's just like,
I can see that.
Yeah, I think there's not much to work with from the beginning because Boba Fett has never been a character we expected any emotion from. So it's probably a fine line to play with. I mean, I can't complain. I mean, people think Hayden Christensen is a good actor for some fucking reason. So I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, I think Temuera Morrison's better than him. So he's definitely better than what Kelly Marie Tran did as Rose.
Different characters. Different characters. Yeah. Go, Papa Moose.
I was going to say, did you guys see the interview where Temuera Morrison created... It reminds me of Mark Hamill and Luke. Well, Temuera Morrison is really heavily creatively disagreeing with a lot of the way that John is writing the show.
I don't know if
you saw that.
You didn't see it? I played that yesterday, He's like, he's talking too much. I'm trying to get my lines to me now because I don't think Boba Fett should be talking this much.
He just doesn't think
because Boba Fett should not be a main character of a show.
That's the problem. It's like everyone had all these expectations for who Boba Fett is without knowing who Boba Fett is.
For me, I had these expectations of a character that's a main character in a Star Wars story. So yes, if you're a main character in a Star Wars story, you should have emotional depth to your character, even if it's Boba Fett. To me,
the one thing he is,
I think they've given him depth. Yeah.
Even if we didn't know him, right? Like all people say, like you just said, they don't know what who Boba Fett is. and they're expecting something without even knowing who it is. What we do know at the very basis is he's respected and feared in the galaxy. His name is known in underworld circles, and he's getting none of that this entire series.
Yeah, until the entire Tatooine planet gets told that he got killed by some dude who was blind, and he hit his jetpack, and he fell into the sand trap.
I mean, who told that story, though? Everybody died.
Yeah. People knew.
Max Rebo didn't die.
Max Rebo didn't see that.
Someone in the show, I can't remember, I'm out of it today, but someone in the show mentioned it to Boba Fett. They're like, you died in the... Fennec said that. Starlight Pit.
Fennec. So that's a but she also looked at his name in reverence when he said who he was. She looked at him like, oh, fuck that.
But it's a known thing, right?
It's not a known thing, like how he. I don't think anybody knows that.
They have the details. Ass
Han Solo, like hit him like that. I mean, even with Luke Skywalker,
unless Luke started going around spreading rumors and trying to make
not
him
the Jedi way.
It also it depends a little bit. I mean, Boba Fett was known for being a lethal bounty hunter, and now he's trying to run the whole crime organization, and he's been gone for 5 years. I would totally understand if people wouldn't respect him right away.
Yeah,
that seems realistic to me.
This is a good point that I'm okay with Boba it. Fett. He works really well as like an anti-hero in a crime world, and so like you're saying, like a darker version of the Solo film. Not a noble hero. I know anti monster can mess you up, but still, Jesus Christ. I'm sure someone's gonna make a Rule 34 about that. But do you guys have any final thoughts on the Book of Boba Fett before we move on to our other two topics? I still enjoy this last episode. Are you guys feeling more positively about the series? Absolutely. Or like if you guys had to rate the first four episodes as a whole, scale of 1 to 10, what would you give? If I give mine, I would say the number of episodes matches the rating. I'd give it a 4.
I'd give it a 6.5.
I'd probably
give it more. Yeah, I'm at 3 or 4 for the whole series right now.
Maybe a 5.
Okay, gosh, so how do I have the highest?
The average is 5, right? The average is 5.
I can go with 5. It's been disappointing and it's been good at other times, but I don't know. I'm just excited because I know where the show's going, and I'm happy with the way it's supposedly going to go. Because
where is it going? That's my question. I don't
the final
see...
battle against the Pikes.
Sure. What impact is this going to have on the universe at all? Does the story even matter at the end of the day?
It matters to Boba.
It doesn't necessarily need to matter as much. I mean, he's going to become the head of the end game is he's going to become the head of he's going to be the next job of the Hutt. He's going to be the guy to be feared.
Yeah.
That story is important, so it's supposed to matter, and they're not making it matter to me.
Yeah, I think they will. Though. I think with the inclusion of Din Djarin, like that stuff is going to make it matter as a grand whole. I think if they end it in the way that I hope they do, that he works with Din Djarin, they try to take back Mandalore, and that Boba Fett truly becomes the next Jabba the Hutt and has that same kind of power and the same kind of muscle in his crew, if not better. I think then it will have a huge impact going forward for the series or for the universe as a whole. But until it does that, I can understand not seeing how it's going to have big implications over the whole thing. But it is funny because we've talked about Bo-Katan a lot so far, and there's rumors now. Well, there's been rumors for a while. There's rumors that she was going to have a spinoff series with Cara Dune as a co-star, and they were going to probably be the leaders of the Rangers of the New Republic series. And this comes from the Hashtag Show, and I don't think they've gotten anything correct yet. I don't think it's enough time has been allocated to give them like a a verdict of being reliable or not. But they said in this new article that their sources shared that the series will take place after the Mandalorian season 3 and something about flashbacks. Flashbacks within the series as well. They said, interestingly, my sources did divulge that Bo-Katan was set to feature prominently in Rangers of the New Republic. That show was silently canceled after comments were made by star Gina Carano, among other issues. So some of these story elements and characters may be carried over to the Bo-Katan series. And the last part was saying that I think it's likely we see the series in late 2023 or early 2024. It should follow the third season of The Mandalorian. And so that kind of makes a lot of sense to me that they would do a Bo-Katan series if it takes place after Mandalorian season 3. That also means she lives past Mandalorian season 3 and that her issues with Din Djarin has been resolved. So this throws a wrench in what my predictions were for the future of Mandalore and everything, because I've been rewatching a lot of the Mandalorian arcs in the Clone Wars, like the ones with Darth Maul taking over what do they call it, Crimson Dawn. And I think a lot of people forget Bo-Katan was like a really mean person. I mean, she was a villain for a long time until I don't think she ever hasn't really been a villain, if you think about it, because she went from being with the Death Watch to turning on the Death Watch because they didn't want, and this is a key quote that I think is going to be a huge factor here going forward, she did not want an outsider to rule Mandalore, which was Darth Maul. So she left Death Watch, swore to fight off Darth Maul, and, you know, she wants to restore glory to Mandalore and everything. So now that Mandalore has fallen and she's kind of back and she's got apparently like her own little small crew who's trying to retake Mandalore, there's a lot about her arc that I kind of forgot about in Star Wars Rebels. So if any of you guys like remember any of that,
she's in like two episodes.
I think it's more than two episodes.
Yeah, because she gives Sabine the saber, the dark saber, yeah. And like that, that's supposed to mean something.
Only in two episodes in Rebels.
Why do I thought those like three or four.
No, she was in the first two episodes of season four where they stopped Sabine's machine.
Well, maybe I'm convoluting the fact that because she was also in Rebels, like we saw her there too. I think that's
Yeah, but it seems like she has a bigger story going forward. As we do it clockwise, so we'll start out with you, Palpamemes. What do you think about the idea of a Bo-Katan series? Is that interest you even in the slightest? Do you think that's a character strong enough to take on her own series?
No, but I said the same thing about Boba Fett, and I am intrigued in the Boba Fett show. So, I mean, I'm sure it can be fine if it is true. I would just prefer a whole Mandalore type of show, not just specifically... Targeting one character kind of limits what the show can be about, I feel. I think we're seeing that with the Book of Boba Fett. I'm not, like, against the idea, but at the same time, I don't really care. However, since it's supposed to take place right after Mando Season 3, my prediction would be Din Djarin holds the Darksaber throughout Mando Season 3. At the end of the season, something happens, a conflict happens between him and Bo-Katan. She gets the Darksaber back, setting up her show to go retake Mandalore. Whatever. Okay, fine, I guess. This is nothing too interesting. I don't know what they would do with it. I'm not really excited if that's true, to be honest. I don't really care for that.
Hmm.
I think she is leagues more of an interesting character than Boba Fett. She has an established backstory that we actually see a lot of her. Boba Fett, we know he's a clone. He's a little bit of Attack of the Clones, and then we see him in the Clone Wars a little bit. Jump to the original trilogy, and that's all we knew about Boba Fett, minus some comics or whatever, prior to this show. Or prior to the Mandalorian. Bo-Katan, we saw her in the Clone Wars. She was part of Death Watch. So she's clearly, she has some evil in her. Maybe not some evil, but she's kind of what I wanted Boba Fett to be. I didn't want Boba Fett to be all this nice guy who cares about a bunch of people, who's always kind to animals, you know, so empathetic. I didn't want that from Boba Fett. So hopefully we get that from Bo-Katan if this is true. We know she cares a lot about Mandalore. She has a lot of passions, and she's kind of ruthless in a way that she'll do whatever she can to take back Mandalore. And I want a character with drive that I know what her motivations are. And with Boba Fett, we kind of got that sprinkled a little bit and just wasn't that great. With Bo-Katan, you don't need to waste your time as much. We know who she is. It's been established in Mandalorian season 2. She has a personality. I like the actress. The story, I'm not sure what the story would be, but just as the character, I would be interested and way more interested than I am with Boba Fett.
I'm with Goldman on this. I gotta be honest with you. I'm with him. It is intriguing to me. And I do feel like what Palpatine said is what's going to be the setup. We're gonna get Mando season 3. The conflict is going to be set there, and that's where we're going to set the stage for Bo-Katan series. You're going to go to Mandalore, and season 3 of Mandalorian, definitely they're going to go to Mandalore at some point. They have to, and that's going to set up her series trying to retake Mandalore. But I don't agree that she's a villain. She's that very complex character that they've done many times, that passionate, break no bones about anything kind of person who's going to do whatever they have to for her people. She's, in her mind, she's doing it for her people. She's doing it for her people and her planet, and that's what it's about. So it's not evil. It's just, if anyone's ever watched The Expanse, you see the characters there a lot that are like this in The Expanse as well. They're just dedicated to their people, and they want to help the people so much that they'll, by any means necessary, do what they have to do to get there. And I think that's what the series is going to end up being about too. So she's an intriguing character, much more, even more intriguing than, yeah, Boba Fett. I mean, Boba Fett's the OG. He's the one who gave us the Mandalorian armor. He's the template, if you will. But Bo-Katan's, I think, a much more interesting.
The last time Lung and I agreed on something, jeez.
What do you guys think? Like this what makes me interested in like what could happen with Mandalorian season 3. Her coming in and getting her own series, to me, that shows that, like, the problem with Mandalore hasn't been resolved at the end of Mandalorian season 3. But then we also had the report that, you know, I dropped on, I can't remember how long ago it was, like 6 months now, sometime last year, about Mandalorian apparently being, Mandalorian season 3 being the last of the series. And it could, like, mold into something else. Like, instead of being called The Mandalorian, it could be called Mandalore. But with Bo-Katan getting her own series, whether it be a mini series that's one season or a couple seasons, do you think that has to do anything with Mandalorian potentially ending on season 3? Does that still seem like a more of a possibility now, or less of a possibility with her getting her own series?
I think it's too early to say right now, because we don't know how Mando season 3's story is going to go. Like, we can put things together and say, oh, I think it's going to go here. But with Grogu gone, that loses such a huge aspect of what made the show great. And I think the writers, they're aware of that. But they could set up a lot in season 3 for a season 4 to come as well. We just don't know. My question is, how should The Mandalorian season 3 end? I mean, I don't know if you guys have any ideas on how you should end this show. Do you guys have any ideas for...
No clue.
My opinion, season 2, here's the hottest take. It should have ended on season 2. Mandalorian should have ended on season 2 because it was such a perfect ending. It was a great ending for the story that we got. I didn't need any more story after that. But I'm still excited for Mando season 3, of course, because I love the show. I just think it would have been smarter to end it on season 2. However, I hope I'm wrong when it inevitably does end at some point. But I don't know. I just feel it's too early to say. It's kind of up in the air right now.
I think it's... If there is a Bo-Katan show, it would be more likely that this would be the last season of The Mandalorian, because The Mandalorian is Din Djarin's story. And the first two seasons were all about him caring about Grogu, finding Grogu, loving Grogu, and then getting him to a safe place with Luke. So the only remaining plot thread that he really has investment in... Actually, no, personally, Din Djarin doesn't have any investment in what happens to Mandalore. He's just going to be dragged along because he has the Darksaber. And Bo-Katan's going to drag him along in some way. Oh, I need to defeat you, or you need to be part of this, whatever. Actually, no, they're going to tie in what happened. Maybe that's what's happened in season 3. They're going to tie the armor and maybe other people of that clan of the Mandalorians to Bo-Katan's clan, and maybe they fight, and maybe Din Djarin brings peace or something. But the interesting aspect of what's left with the Mandalorian is what's going to happen on Mandalore. And Din Djarin's not the main character there. Bo-Katan is, maybe Sabine is, all the other Mandalorians we've seen in Rebels and Clone Wars. They're more important to the story of Mandalore than Din Djarin is. So I don't know if they want to drag this out and continue making it Din Djarin's story. I don't think the end of Mandalorian season 3, if it is the last season, will be the end of his story. I can see him being a prominent character in some other shows going forward. If there is a climactic finale where they fight Thrawn, he's going to play a big part in that. I just wouldn't be surprised if the Mandalorian season 3 is the last one. Kind of like how Iron Man 3 was the last Iron Man movie, but he still had a big role in the Avengers movies and Captain America Civil War and Spider-Man. I could kind of see them taking that direction. Because that also gives Pedro Pascal more freedom to do other stuff. Because, you know, he's heavily involved with The Last of Us on HBO. I know he's doing other projects that I can't think of off the top of my head. So I believe there's more credence to the fact that Mando season 3 would be the last season.
This is why I hate going last. You stole all my thunder.
I love going last.
I agree. You can go a couple ways. I think it's gonna be the last season because it's his stories, his main story arc, if you will, not his whole story, but his main story arc ends with this. He's still gonna be around. They're still gonna use him. He's gonna be a major character. I could see him playing heavily in Bo-Katan series. Now, as far as that series go, I think Bo-Katan series could possibly be limited, maybe just one season, two season thing, telling about her story. And then they do a show called Mandalore. Let's say she's ruling. And Din Djarin, he's heavily invested in Mandalore because he never knew his identity. He's trying to find out who he is. And he enveloped himself so much in this identity of being a Mandalorian that he was taught by these exiled Death Watch people that he didn't realize there's another way. That this isn't the only way. There's another way, and that the planet still exists because he was told that it was gone, that it was destroyed. You can never go back there. So he is invested. I think he is curious. He wants to know more. He wants to be, you know, grow this identity of him as being a Mandalorian. He wants it to feel real. I can see him going there and, you know, becoming like her general, you know, master at arms or whatever, the main guy that runs the military. He could be the balance to her more hard-line, hard-nosed way of leading. You know what I mean? So I could see that in like a Mandalore series, you will. Or it could just be the Bo-Katan series and they continue it that way. But that's how I could see it happening. But he's definitely going to be around. We're still going to see Din Djarin. He's still going to do things. It's just not going to be the Mandalorian series.
Yeah, he's like the future character of Star Wars for me, at least over the next 5 years. I mean, I would not be surprised if he got his own movie eventually. I think that would be something that would be really cool. Gyra says, I actually agree with the Goldman. Bo-Katan, not going to lie, is more interesting than Boba and Din. Former dark character has to retake her throne and bring together hero people. I think she could be the ruler of Mandalore. I think it'd be more interesting if Din Djarin was, but I feel like that's not what he would want. I think he'd want to, you know, go in retirement, raise the kid, raise Grogu to become something else, or let Grogu continue his Jedi training, or whatever happens with that, because that'll be interesting with Luke and what happens in the sequels, and maybe killing Grogu eventually, which would be very sad. But speaking of the sequels, our last topic of today is about the ever-so-controversial sequels. The controversy is, to me, this is old news. I'm actually surprised people are kind of making this news, but J.J. Abrams apparently wanted to destroy Coruscant in The Force Awakens when Starkiller Base destroys the, I think it's a Hossian Prime system, the New Republic.
Prime, yes.
Yeah, so that's what Starkiller destroys, and apparently J.J. wanted it to be Coruscant, and Lucasfilm said no, and some people are upset about this, which I don't know why they would be upset that he wants to destroy Coruscant.
Prequel shows.
You're probably not wrong.
They destroyed Kamino in Bad Batch and everyone praised it.
Well, they didn't destroy the whole planet, and that was symbolic, and that was supposed to be emotional.
They destroyed the only thing that planet had going.
They destroyed a couple buildings that they could rebuild.
That's a good point. Anyways.
Yeah, no, I don't see the controversy in this because you guys know why Lucasfilm said no, right? It's because at the time that Force Awakens was being made, Colin Trevorrow's Star Wars Episode 9 was going to have Coruscant be one of the main planets.
They didn't. Are you saying they had a plan?
I'm saying they loosely had a plan and had an idea. There's a reason, like at Galaxy's Edge,
you're saying
like
someone had a plan, but they didn't put it all together.
Probably Pablo Hidalgo, the guy who, I guess, semi broke this news, even though, like I said, this is like old information. That's why, like, some of the YouTube channels who are like, man, fuck you, JJ, and all, it's like, this actually is really old.
Sad.
Like this is like, if you just keep up with the narrative of like Star Wars behind the scenes, you would have known this for, I mean, geez, it's been almost 3 years since the movie came out. I knew this before going into Episode 9 that the reason they didn't put Coruscant in is because they thought they were going to have it in Episode 9. So why the hell would you kill it in Episode 7? But even if it wasn't going to be in Episode 9, they destroyed Coruscant. Would I be upset? Yeah, part of me would be. I would be like, wow, they. But I wouldn't be upset because it's Coruscant. I was upset when they destroyed the planets in The Force Awakens because I was like, wow, it's just like how we started the original trilogy. The entire Republic is kind of destroyed. The Old Republic was destroyed at the beginning of A New Hope, and the Empire rules everything with this new super destroying weapon. Like, if you're going to get mad at J.J. Abrams for something, get mad at him for being unoriginal and kind of destroying any potential original story. But
so here's the thing about that. It wasn't even J.J. Abrams. All of those ideas were set in stone before they even brought that guy on board. You can read that in the Art of Force Awakens book. Like, here's Pablo Hidalgo. I got the tweet right here. He came out again and said that it probably wasn't even J.J. Abrams whose idea this was for Coruscant to be the thing that got blown up. He said there was just someone that wanted to blow up a planet. He said it seems like someone just wanted to have a Death Star. And again, you can go back to the Art of Books and the Making of Books, all these documentaries and stuff. This stuff was already set in stone. Everyone blames J.J., but a lot of it wasn't even in his control. But yeah, Pablo Hidalgo the other day said that probably wasn't even JJ. He doesn't know who it was. It's just one of the concept artists.
But that makes no sense because if he's not only a co-writer, he wrote it with Lawrence Kasdan, and I know they both wanted to bring back that old like feel. And
right.
JJ said that like one of the reasons they had the movie set up the way it was is to feel like A New Hope. Like that was almost intentional. So it would. I mean,
but
if Pablo doesn't know
who
it is,
these
like
plans, these ideas were set in stone. Like this is the storyline that's happening. Then they brought JJ Abrams in. That's what I'm saying. Like, the idea that Starkiller Base or a planet-killing weapon, that was already established before him.
So, do you think that was set by, like, Michael Arndt's script before they let him go?
I don't know.
Like,
all I know is it wasn't even J.J. Abrams. Like, J.J. Abrams didn't come in and said, okay, here, I'm writing this story from scratch. Okay, let's add a planet-destroying weapon. Now, that's funny. You know, everyone blames J.J., but, like, a lot of the things with the New Republic and stuff weren't even him. You know, if you just...
It's so infuriating. It makes me hate
him more. There's a lot of hands in the pie. There's a lot of hands in the pie. A lot of fingers being dipped in, kicking case.
But yeah,
I feel most likely the group did it. You know, it was like the Pablo Hidalgo's creative group. They probably put out a generic outline. Like, we want to see this. We want to see this. We want to see this. And then they gave writers.
I don't think it would be them. They don't have that kind of. They don't have that kind of control over the stories.
Yeah.
They're guides. You go to Pablo and you're like, hey, I want to do this, and he would either say yes or no in terms of it working or not.
I think it was people like Disney.
I think no.
Really? I think he had a lot of creative input in Force Awakens.
He did have a lot of creative input. He was more involved with that movie than he's ever been any movie in his entire life.
People forget how much involvement Disney themselves had in Force Awakens. Like, there was a lot of fingering, and there was a lot of people. I didn't think
they would have that kind of knowledge to like go into details and be like, we want, like, all right, the idea of destroying another planet.
A lot of fingering.
Sure, I understand that. Yes, a lot of fingering going around here, but. The idea of it being like a Starkiller base or destroying the New Republic, like, I'm curious on who started that, because what Palmeems was saying, I do know to be true. Like, I do know that when JJ was brought in, certain decisions were made without him. Like, simply, one of the big ones was the George Lucas outlines. Like, people were saying, like, oh, JJ threw out the script that George gave him and everything. No. Kathleen Kennedy, mainly Bob Iger and Alan Horn and the other Bob at, God, what is his name?
Chapek or Bob?
No, not Bob Chapek. No, there's another Bob who deals with the studios movie. Yeah, there's a lot of Bobs over there at Disney. But basically, three or four of the people who read the George Lucas outlines, they were the ones who decided, we don't want to use this. And then they moved on to something else.
Yeah.
And then JJ was brought in. So you are right. JJ didn't have all the control that I think a lot of us would either, some would want, some would not want. But it baffles me that, like, that was part of the mentality of, like, let's just destroy the New Republic entirely and do all this again, and then tell JJ like what has to be, like, come on, like,
point by point saying fill in the blank.
Listen, right, I'm telling you, I know we use it with Pablo Hidalgo's in a kind of power. I'm not saying Pablo Hidalgo's his idea. I'm saying Kathleen Kennedy, VPs, whatever the case, got the story group together and said, hey, give us an outline. This is what we want to see. Incorporate these elements, just very loose elements, come up with an outline. So we can give it to our writers, and then that's when it went out to the writers and directors, and they're like, okay, this is what we want to see. This is what we're going to make. So there's no plan. It was just a loose bullet point of crap they wanted to see.
Akira seems to have a good summarization of what happened. Michael Arndt, who, if you guys don't remember, he was one of the writers for Toy Story. Lucas brought him in to write adaptations of his sequel trilogy outlines. So, according to the Force Awakens art book, Michael Arndt and Lucasfilm had planned the planet-destroying weapon in the script. It was called the Doomstar. What the fuck is that kind of name? He dropped out before he finished his third act, and then J.J. and Kazan came in to finish the third act. I don't know if... the only part I disagree is that they were brought in to finish the third act. This coming from Kathleen Kennedy and a couple other people that I know is that he just didn't have... He couldn't get the script done. He really didn't know what to do. And I know one of his main complaints was the second Luke Skywalker was brought in, he stole the entire show. So they may have used parts of his script in the first couple of acts, but I don't think they've really used almost anything from his script entirely. I mean, there's probably a lot of it, because a lot of it's based off of the Lucas sequel outlines that they probably ditched either intentionally or unintentionally. But I could have sworn that at least JJ and Kazan started from scratch. Oh, okay. So, yeah, this would make more sense, that they finished the third act and then rewrote the first two. That is an awful way to make a movie or write a story, in my opinion.
It's
kind of
crazy.
Yeah,
people talk about Episode 9 having problems, which it definitely obviously has a lot of production issues. But you look at The Force Awakens, how many changes that thing went through. I mean,
The Force Awakens may have had behind the scenes problems, but it doesn't feel like that on screen. It feels like a pretty cohesive movie. It doesn't feel, the pacing isn't whack.
It's the first movie of a trilogy.
It felt like there was a plan. Felt like more of a plan than the Phantom Menace.
It's easier to rewrite an entire movie than when it's the first movie in the trilogy. It's a lot easier than Episode 9, where you have a guy write, and then you have to ditch him, and then one of your main actresses dies, and then you bring in this guy, and he tries to fix everything. I think it's a lot easier to go back to that first movie. And
Rise of Skywalker had a bunch of pacing problems. It was way too quick. The Force Awakens is a fairly well-paced movie. It's honestly...
I'm not disagreeing about that. I'm saying
the worst thing about The Force Awakens is just its redundancy. That's all. Yeah. Like Star Wars only says,
it's a really well-made movie.
Yeah.
I would say that like the approach to both of them were completely different. The approach to The Force Awakens was Star Wars is back. All right, we got to show people that. And so Disney and mainly Bob Iger were thinking, how do we get that feeling? How do we, you know, break the bank? And when it came to Episode 9, it was, we just got to get this motherfucking thing out. Because they already delayed it one time, and then they had to delay it again. Well, actually, my bad. They only delayed it once. But they had to delay it for the Colin Trevorrow thing and bring in J.J. Abrams, and they were basically like, dude, you got 2 years to not only write the script, get in production, and release the film. And as we all know, they were making final changes weeks, maybe even days before the movie came out. I mean, this thing was...
You'd be surprised how many things on the day that they were shooting were completely changing.
Jesus.
Like that guy I've been talking to, like, it's kind of insane how much stuff, like, because, like, I remember one of the workers on production, the production team came out and he was interviewed or something, and he was talking about how, like, J.J. Abrams would just come up with all these just absurd ideas on the day and then would go back to the script, delete this, rewrite parts of the script, like, and then they would film that day and whatnot. I'm like, I believe that. So, like, major changes were made on the day of shooting and all that. Makes me wonder if that whole...
Isn't it fairly odd? Like, J.J. Abrams directed 2 of the 3 movies in the sequels, and he feels completely disconnected from the Star Wars franchise right now. Like, every time there's a Batman movie, they say, oh, Christopher Nolan, what do you think? Or they ask some of the previous actors. When the new Spider-Man came out, they asked Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield what they thought. It's like, J.J. Abrams, I don't think he'll ever do anything with Star Wars again. It just feels...
I don't know. He's been working with big studios still. I think he'd come back for sure. He's just a big studio guy.
I think the Rise of Skywalker was tough on him.
I think it definitely was, but...
I think he would have came back to Star Wars after The Force Awakens if he had not done The Rise of Skywalker. Yeah. After the Rise of Skywalker, and from... I'm sure Palpatine, you probably have some good insight on this, but from what I have heard, Lucasfilm and Disney, that it was not going well for him. And there was even... I think we've all talked about this behind the scenes. I know I've talked to other people about this. There's even some like thoughts that like Bad Robot was like intentionally sabotaging things, or
I've heard rumors of that. I don't know how.
Yeah, there's a lot of foul play that happened with those movies because it was. Yeah. Say what you will about the shitty movie, The Last Jedi. That thing did not have a lot of production issues that The Force Awakens. The Force Awakens or Episode 9. Those movies were leaked like crazy. Mm-hmm. And The Last Jedi didn't have that exact same issue. And I think a lot of that has to do with Bad Robot. And I can't even remember the report from years ago, but like there was like talks about how JJ wanted to do everything from Bad Robot and Lucasfilm really didn't want him to do that either. And so there just seems to be like a lot of headbutting going on between Bad Robot and Lucasfilm. I don't see them working together going forward. And I think after Episode 9, after the control, I know Disney like tried to push in on JJ with Episode 9, because I went into Episode 9 thinking he would have the most creative freedom out of the past 2 episodes. Nope. That is not the case at all. That guy was being fucking whipped on his back, and they really dropped the ball. I hate it.
I mean, when you hear things... Oh, go ahead.
So the worst thing that J.J. Abrams could have done for his legacy was do The Rise of Skywalker. Because say hypothetically, say The Rise of Skywalker is the exact same movie, but someone else directed it. Then, in J.J. Abrams' say it was Robert Rodriguez. He was known as the guy who made the one sequel movie that wasn't hated by a lot of people. A lot of people hate it now retroactively, but at the time, it was widely beloved. And he could play a little bit of a victim card, like, oh, I had this story outline and Rian Johnson and Director 3 just tossed it out. It's kind of like how people gained a lot of sympathy for George Lucas after he sold Disney. You know, people were shitting on him constantly back in like the early 2010s, late 2000s. You know, he's like, people, George Lucas raped my childhood, all this crap.
That's like, not true, Goldman. That never happened. That never happened. No one ever hated the prequels. Well, you know, people are naive. What are you talking about?
George Lucas is, I don't want to say legacy, because he did a lot for the film industry, but it wasn't looking too favorable from Star Wars fans right after the prequels. And now he's like a god, because, you know, he's not involved, because he's somewhat a victim. Disney threw out my outlines. That could have been J.J. Abrams to his in this way. I don't think it would have been anywhere near George Lucas's level of sympathy that he gets, but I think it would have been a little bit. But now he's looking. Most people agree The Rise of Skywalker is the worst one of the three. This, most people, you know, there's like The Force Awakens, pretty fun, average movie, fine. Then there's, you know, the people like me who love The Last Jedi, and there's people, a lot of people hate The Last Jedi. And there's a lot of people just like The Rise of Skywalker. Like, it upsets me because I'm a sequel shill. But I talk to all my friends, and they mostly say, oh, Force Awakens, pretty good movie. Last Jedi, yeah, good, it's fine. And they just don't like The Rise of Skywalker, and it's upsetting. And that really did not do any favors for J.J. Abrams, not one bit.
I agree. I don't see him aging in a good way among the Star Wars fan base. But I feel like this, and I felt like this for a while, and I know you guys might disagree because you enjoy the sequels. I feel like they really have kind of put Star Wars in a narrative box going forward, because now that we know what happens 30 years after Return of the Jedi, so that timeline, you kind of have to adhere to what happens in that. But just in general, I feel like what happened with those movies and the lack of good feeling that came out after ending the sequel trilogy really kind of lowered the standards for Star Wars, and maybe just lowered people's interest in the franchise as a whole of like, oh, okay, this, because after the sequels, like Star Wars is on shaky legs. Like Clone Wars did good, but like after the sequels and the very poor reception they had, it ended on a very high note, but well, not even on a very high note, ended on a better note than it started for sure. But after the prequels, yeah, people were kind of like, oh, you know, Star Wars was good, but you know, they ruined it. After the sequels, if anything, that idea has almost been enhanced, and for some people confirmed. Like some people are just like, you know what, I'm fucking done. Like people who were born and saw the original trilogy, I'm gonna be really hard for us to say a lot of them after seeing the sequels and the prequels are considering staying on as Star Wars fans forward.
Those poor souls there.
Yeah, they're like, man, this used to be great. Like you had no idea, it used to be so fucking good, and now they're like, damn, dude, like the Mandalorian is a good thing to, I think, bring it back and bring Star Wars back. But movie wise, man, that's why we talked about Rogue Squadron being like a weird movie to come back to after the sequels, because Star Wars has to come back and hit the ground running when it comes to the next movies. And I really feel like the sequels in hindsight are going to be something that really hindered Star Wars and its growth and its popularity for the next 20 years, maybe just the next 10 or five, but that's how I feel at the moment.
I think The Rise of Skywalker did more damage than just Last Jedi and Force Awakens. But anyway, I don't think I don't think they're in as much of a narrative box as you think. With the characters of Luke, Han, and Leia, yeah. But in terms of what goes on in the galaxy, not really. The First Order isn't really around all that much until The Force Awakens. The Rise of Skywalker takes place a year later. And just the scope of those movies is pretty small. You don't see what happens anywhere else. So you can just say, oh, this stuff's going on. Say you wanted to tell a story between episodes 8 and 9, right? Or say the Mandalorians become really prominent in the galaxy, right? Oh, the events of episode 7 come. Then the events of episode 8 come. The First Order tries to challenge the Mandalorians. There's a little bit of a conflict. Not much happens because there's only a year time between episode 8 and 9. Oh, episode 9 comes. Palpatine comes and he's defeated. The First Order is defeated. And whatever is going on in Mandalore can still continue. So besides with Luke, Han, and Leia, I feel like in terms of just the scope of the galaxy, there's, you can go pretty much anywhere. Pretty much.
Yeah, I don't know, because I feel like it's a reset. Like with after episode 6, the interest is, okay, the Jedi are back. I want to see the Jedi, or maybe even Sith, like just something dealing with the Force. We all know what's going to happen with the Force in these 30 years. Like the most intrigue that I have is Ahsoka and what happens with her. But like the possibility of a Yuuzhan Vong invasion on the Republic and all this stuff, like with what we know after seeing the sequels, that seems like a far reach, because when you look at Star Wars as like the timeline and mainly as like big major events, you go prequels, original trilogy, sequels, and then below that it's the shows, what happens in the shows, like in terms of importance. So for me, when it comes to the importance, like books, comics, video games, and these shows that are coming out, the big thing of that timeline after Return of the Jedi is going to be the sequel trilogy. So everything has to amount to that. We've even seen hints of that with The Mandalorian so far.
I disagree.
Where no matter what happens, it has to lead into that by some way. The First Order has to rise to power for some stupid fucking reason. The Republic and the Resistance now, like, they don't work together. Like, everything seems to me to be a reset at the beginning of The Force Awakens, where we're back to the beginning of A New Hope. Everything's the same. And then we end in the exact same way of the original trilogy. So, like, post-Rise of Skywalker, post-Rise of Skywalker is, to me, is just post-Return of the Jedi. You just have to start from scratch again. And so that's why I feel like it's in a box narratively of redundancy.
Do you have any comments, Palpatine? Because I have a lot.
I've got a lot, definitely. I agree with both of you. I agree with you, Goldman, that, yeah, the sequels take place in a smaller timeline, but you also have these major events that lead up to it, so it only was saying... I mean, Mandalorian's already doing it. We're already seeing these hints of the rise of Palpatine and stuff, and Grogu being the blood catalyst for Palpatine's return and stuff. And it's really cool. I love all that stuff, and I am glad they're not just kind of shying away from the sequels and acting like they aren't happening, whether people like them or not. I mean, all these shows, we've gotten stuff on cloning. Like, it's very obvious what's going on here. So, yes, the sequels, they had their problems, but I think there is ways to help make them better 100% in the long run. And that's what Lucasfilm is doing, and I praise them for that. But that said, I see what you're saying, only it's like, okay, so after episode 9, now what? You know, what's going on now? It's like, do we just make up a new set of bad guys if you want to do post stories, or do you just do a real linear stories on real small subjects? Like, how do you work that?
Kyra agrees with me, so I won. I'm sorry.
You won. Yeah,
false.
Kyra.
False.
Yeah.
False. My turn.
Yeah.
It can easily. You have a good argument with the Force in that they're kind of boxed narratively in terms of what they can do with the Jedi. If they wanted to, we saw even in that one comic series with Kylo Ren, Luke didn't have a big Jedi Academy. You could simply say, oh, Ahsoka's doing some things with other people over here. You can't have Luke involved, unfortunately, but you can have other Jedi out there. So then Rey, after the Rise of Skywalker, goes finds them and whatever. Now, does it take away of the line of Luke saying, I will not be the last Jedi? Sure. I'd rather have interesting stories than just have one line matter a lot. With the First Order.
That's where I disagree. I get upset with Jedi surviving past episode fucking 4. Like, if you tell me there's like a Jedi who lives past episode 4, I'm like, I don't like it, because Yoda said there's it's just him and Luke. So that's how I would feel about like Luke having other Jedi around during that time. But continue.
That's my thoughts on the Jedi and the Force. With the First Order, it's really simple. They just have to treat it in the lore like the First Order. What happened after the Force Awakens and the Last Jedi, the First Order did not become a galactic empire. They were basically a terrorist group that blew up the New Republic and tried to march into the galaxy. All they have to do is say a bunch of other systems. They said they were too scared in The Last Jedi. Just have them defend their own worlds, and the First Order has trouble trying to conquer the galaxy. That's why Kylo Ren is so desperate to have the stupid-ass Star Destroyers in The Rise of Skywalker so we can make all these other worlds submit. And this is what pains me the most. They should not get rid of the First Order after The Rise of Skywalker. I'm sorry. But in terms of the lore perspective, having a big event, if you think about it, what happens in The Force Awakens with the Republic getting blown up should be a huge event in terms of the lore of Star Wars. Like right now, if you look at the lore of Star Wars, probably the single biggest event is Order 66 and Palpatine becoming the Emperor. Like even like all these books, that's always referenced. What happened? The Jedi were wiped out. The Republic's now an empire. Think about the Republic getting destroyed. That's probably more important than the Rebels overthrowing the Empire, to be honest. Maybe not. But you can make an argument for both sides, in my opinion. And then just having the First Order take over the Republic and then just have them be wiped out a year later, that is so lame. You know what the worst part is? It's going to happen. The First Order is going to be gone. And you know why? It has to do with the Lego Halloween special. People say they don't matter. They're not canon. That's true. But I do think that they treat those movies like they'll say things like the First Order is gone. You should go meet my friend Rey. I do think that part is canon. I don't think the First Order is going to be a dominant threat anymore, which is stupid. The Final Order is even dumber.
That's what happens with these movies. And like you're talking about like the First Order is supposed to be viewed as like a terrorist group. I would like that to be the case if the like opening crawl of The Last Jedi didn't like specifically mention that the First Order like reigns across the entire galaxy. Like he, it says like Supreme Leader Snoke has like seized military control of the entire galaxy. So when I hear that stuff, it's like, okay, so they're the Empire again, and now that they're destroyed, do I want them to do what they did with the Empire in like the Aftermath trilogy and like slowly defeat them? Not really, but it feels like it has to go that way, where they defeat the remnants of the First Order post Rise of Skywalker.
Eventually, but it shouldn't happen right away. And it's funny you bring that up, because there's a line in The Last Jedi where it's when Rey is telling Luke what happened. I know we don't see his reaction to him finding out Han's dead. Right afterwards, she says, the First Order will control all the major systems within weeks. So that means at the point in The Last Jedi, the First Order does not have complete control of the galaxy. So you can say Rey thought that. The First Order does try to take over the galaxy. People everywhere, they don't help out the Resistance because they don't really know what the fuck the Resistance is. But they just stick together. You know, maybe there's some pockets. Maybe some planets make alliance together. And they're more worried about their own shit because, you know, the New Republic was just destroyed. And then they, you know, the First Order just, they're the biggest threat in the galaxy, but they're not strong enough to where they can just take over a bunch of planets. So with the Rise of Skywalker, yes, the Final Order can happen or whatever, that they all get destroyed, whatever. And then I'm not like stumbling here, I'm just getting frustrated, because there is no reason why in the EU the Empire can continue on for another 15 years after Return of the Jedi. If that's the case, there's no reason why the First Order cannot do the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You can't just win one big war and then not have remnants around.
Yeah, exactly. Well, to that comment, Rey was probably debriefed about something right before she left.
There's no time jump.
Well, no, there is. From when Rey first arrives on Dakar, you know, she changes her outfit. She probably was spoke to Leia. Leia's like, it's probably a big Resistance meeting, where they're like, okay, we need Rey and Chewbacca and R2-D2 to go on the Falcon to go get Luke. Well, we need to evacuate. It's probably a conversation that happened off screen that is totally realistic. So maybe Rey was debriefed. Oh, the First Order is going to take over the galaxy. She has no clue what the hell she's talking about. She's just spewing words, and you can even tell. So, okay. No, I disagree.
Huh.
I've got one question for you guys.
While
we're on this whole sequel topic, all this frustrations and whatnot, do you guys think it's like legitimately crossed people at Lucasfilm, like higher up at Lucasfilm minds and Disney, to just delete it, start from scratch?
No,
just redo
the sequels. Hell no.
Mm-hmm. You
know how many inconsistencies that would bring? Like the amount of like the problem with that is like the amount of commitment that is given to these kind of stories from the start. I mean, it makes me almost
DC does it all the time.
That's different.
I'm not saying I want it, but it's different because Star Wars was Star Wars. Then now Star Wars is owned by Disney, right?
Yeah,
but what I'm saying is, do you think?
But it has to be at some, like, I think what's different is that Star Wars is like the canon timeline, like what actually happens in like the movies and the show, like all that stuff is supposed to be pretty much sacred. Like that is supposed to be huge phenomena. Like it, like the DC movies, the Marvel movies, they can change anything they want anytime because it's fucking ridiculous and it's stupid. Star Wars being like the all-encompassing, like multicultural aspect of it. Mm-hmm. When you tell like a story, and I think the prequels and the sequels don't really deliver in terms of like the big emotional fantasy narrative that you would want, but when you look at like the original trilogy and you come away from that like coming of age, finding your destiny and fulfilling like this kind of mythological history and the storytelling moments, that stuff, like I said, is sacred. And if you make that not canon, and I'm using the original trilogy in this aspect, if you make that not canon, it really does make you wonder, well, then what was that for? And, you know, like, if you tell me that it didn't happen, you just start anew. Like, it's really weird. So while I think the sequels are, of course, far less than the original trilogy in terms of quality, doing that to the sequels, doing that to Carrie Fisher's last performance, doing that to, you know, it makes, if anything, it would make me more upset if they didn't make it canon, because it's like, you know what, you made this piece of shit, now you need to go stand by it. I don't give a fuck how bad
I like
it stinks.
What they're doing is they're doing
they have to do
stuff. They're like,
yeah, they wrote themselves into a corner.
You guys hate me. I like the idea of Palpatine coming back. I think Revenge of the Sith is one of my favorite movies. I like the guy who's been the big evil guy who's been trying to find a way to cheat death, finding a way to cheat death. I love that. Hate
me
all you
want,
but
I think
I love it.
It's a good idea.
It's just the execution of it. JJ's
stupidly.
Like, Well, like, we saw that concept art of Episode 9 on them on Coruscant, and the guy was like, yeah, it was going to be some Dark Lord. It wasn't originally Palpatine. That's what I'm saying. There's all these things changed from the get-go, like, day by day. And so I'm just wondering when Palpatine returning was on board in the idea.
This comment right here is kind of a summarization, I think, of how a lot of people feel, that the sequel trilogy needs another sequel story to justify and satisfy the existence of them. It doesn't feel like we had a lot of closure from it. It just feels like a repeat of the original trilogy.
I think we had closure for the characters, a lot of the characters for sure, especially like Rey and Kylo and Ben Solo, but not the overarching story, not the overall story, you know, as... It's my problem with it.
I left the theater being like, well, what was the point of any of this?
You know what they have to do? Because the thing with The Rise of Skywalker, to me at least, it didn't feel like conceptually what should be happening is important. It just doesn't feel that important because it happened so quick. If I was Lucasfilm, like, I kind of like what they're doing. They're somewhat leading up. They're tying in stories to Palpatine's Rise to Power. They should really make that a pretty important story in the timeline, in my opinion. If you do that, they did that with the prequels. The prequels, at the time, you know, they're widely hated, but they stuck with it. They told the Clone Wars. All these books now, everything ties into Palpatine's rise to power and the Order 66. The stories of the prequels in the universe of Star Wars are so important that you cannot ignore them. Maybe Phantom Menace, but Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith? No. For right now, it feels like you could ignore the sequels because nothing else really connects to them. There's some really cool ideas in the sequels. The problem is, world-building-wise, they're just not fleshed out. I think the First Order's Rise to Power is very interesting. About an Imperial remnant goes away for 30 years. They rebuild themselves. They come back. They attempt to take over the galaxy. A lot of other systems defend themselves. They fail. There's a little bit of a conflict with the First Order. You know, Kylo Ren is trying to establish himself as a supreme leader. Oh, Palpatine's back? What? Now he's dead. Okay, fine. There's regained hope in the galaxy. People join together, and now they actually fight the First Order in what can be an equal war, not like a rebellion against an empire, kind of like the Clone Wars, where there's equal footing. That would be very interesting, and then the First Order eventually loses. They can do something like that if they just drop off the First Order. If the galaxy is completely reset after the Rise of Skywalker, where there's nothing going on, that is so bad. That is beyond awful. That means...
At the very least, with, like, if they do a Rey and Finn show or even just a Finn show, I would love to see remnants of the Sith cultists attempt to go after Rey and her people, because, it makes sense.
There's a cult. In that book you have, Palp Memes, pull that out. The Secrets of the Sith. There is a kind of like a small cult in that when you get to like the dark side stuff, and it talks about I don't know what page it is. It's probably like, I mean, it's a small, I don't even know if you can hear me, but I don't know what page it is. It's a very small book, of course, but go to the section that talks about like
Code of the Sith.
It's like a divine power thing. It's like a group of worshipers of the dark side that Palpatine talks about. So you'll have parts of like the dark side, the light side. It just kind of goes into, it even has like the Night Sister. No. But like these guys could, I've never really seen them in Star Wars canon either. And it's interesting that Palpatine even brought them up, because if you look for like the image of them, it'll have like a guy in a hooded figure, I think surrounded by a couple of other guys or something like that. I bring my book out and tell you what page it is if I could find it. But basically, it's like
this guy.
Yes, those guys. Yeah. What are they called?
Acolytes of the Beyond.
Acolytes of the Beyond. It's a cool name, and it's like a cool concept of like other Force users who are interested in it. Can you read us the section about it, like what it says?
Yeah, it says, not all who worship the dark side are strong with the Force. Some are merely fanatics who understand that the dark side is the one true path to victory, even if it is a path they are not capable of walking themselves. One group of adherents was the Acolytes of the Beyond. They believed that the Force is akin to a river, and that the dark side is the only means of changing its currents. To alter the future in their favor, they devoted themselves to gathering Sith Arcana, destroying the objects, and releasing the dark energies within as a sacrificial offering to the ancient Sith Lords.
See, that's cool. Yeah. I would like more stories about them, or just in general in Star Wars canon going forward. But that's all I can offer the sequels at this point.
Bring in the Yuuzhan Vong. That's what they should do.
Well, that's what's funny. That's what Pablo Hidalgo said. His favorite thing about Episode 9 was the Exegol and the Sith cultists and stuff. And I agree with him. I think it's got like the best world building that we've seen in the in the sequels overall.
Yeah. Well, we've run the sequel topic into the ground as per usual. It's a fun one, but other than that, that's all I have for you guys. You guys have any parting comments you want to give before we wrap the show up?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for all tuning in. If you are watching, please go check out the official Chatooine YouTube channel. Like I said, after the end of the Book of Boba Fett, the ending of the series, we will be transitioning all of Chatooine over to that channel, the official Chatooine YouTube channel. So please go subscribe, leave a like on the video over there, leave a like on today's video, check out Palpamine, check out Goldman, check out Lunga in the comment section below. Get 15% off your books by using the Star Wars code, Star Wars Saga, for all your Star Wars books. And I mean, that's it. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you all next time. What?